Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, September 16th, 2012. This is episode 9101 after 9:01. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter the promo code TechGuy. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone. Find out what your gadget is worth and get cash to upgrade to the latest iPhone at Gazelle.com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click on the radio microphone, and enter the offer code TechGuy. That's Stamps.com. Use the offer code TechGuy. Well, hello, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, and it's time to talk computers and the internet, cell phones, and camcorders, MP3 players, and home theater. And, well, I guess we'll talk a little bit about iPhone. The iPhone 5 is out. Well, it will be out. You can order it now. You may get it someday. They sold out, Apple sold out of the initial run in 1 hour. Between midnight and 1 a.m. on Friday morning. If you didn't get online before then, you're going to be waiting. And then I was lucky because I didn't get up at 1 a.m. But I went to 8 in the morning. In a normal time, I went to the Verizon site, and they still had some, not all, available for shipment on Friday. So I'll be getting mine on Friday. And, you know, it's interesting to watch because everybody knew everything about the iPhone. Turns out the rumors were exactly right. There were no questions really unanswered before Tim Cook took the stage to announce the iPhone on Wednesday. But, you know, I think that that's going to be the way it is from now on. And I realized why it's changed. It's not that Tim Cook is doing such a poor job of secrecy compared to Steve Jobs. No. In fact, Cook told the Wall Street Journal, he said, we're going to double down on secrecy. And I'm sure they are. And I'm sure they'll fire people saying, here's the problem. The iPhone's too popular now. And in order to have enough iPhones in stock so that they could deliver it a week after, they have to start manufacturing in China months ago. And so it's inevitable. You can control everybody, you know, in Cupertino at the Apple headquarters. That's no problem. They're scared to death. I mean, they really are literally scared to death of saying anything. They know it'll cost them their job. In fact, we've heard stories that Apple, at least under Steve Jobs, I don't know if it's changed under Tim Cook, but that Apple would, when they first hired somebody, an engineer, they'd assign them to a fake project for a few weeks or months to see if it leaked out. And if it leaked out, boom, you're gone because that's fake. Ha ha, gotcha. Neener, neener, neener. So, I mean, they're very serious about this. Here's the problem. You've got a million Chinese workers building these things. And you really can't control that. And so that's why all the leaks, everything we knew about the iPhone came from China, came from the manufacturers and suppliers, the people who are making the outside, the inside, the case. And so we knew everything about it. It's 5 inches tall, one icon row taller. Makes no sense. It's the strangest aspect ratio ever. Actually, the aspect ratio is not strange. It's 16 by 9. It's just like your widescreen TV, but it's turned on its side. It's at 1,136 pixels from top to bottom and 640 across, which is an unusual resolution, to say the least. And if you have older iPhone apps that aren't adjusted for that resolution, they're going to have black bars on it. Just like when you watch movies on your widescreen TV or I Love Lucy, you got black bars on it. You're going to have the same thing. But applications designed for it and movies and TV will fill up the screen nicely. It's supposed to be a much better screen. We'll see when we see it. It's one thing we can guarantee. It's thinner and lighter, much thinner, much lighter. In fact, it may be, there's some question about this, the thinnest smartphone on the market. It's not, you know, even if it is the thinnest, it's by a millimeter or two over things like the Galaxy S3. Weight-wise, it's just a hair under 4 ounces, very light. In fact, my friends who held one, I haven't held one yet because, you know, Apple doesn't like me, so they don't invite me to their events or anything, which is great. I don't care. But my friends who went were invited, were able to hold them, and they say it's so light it feels hot. One of my friends, MG Siegler from TechCrunch, said it felt hollow. It's so light. But that's, of course, compared to the current iPhone. It's got a newer, faster processor. Apple didn't say much about it. We're still not sure exactly what it is. Screen should have a better, it's brighter, it's better, more colorful. So that's good. You know, let's face it. It's one icon row better. It's not a huge difference. If you have an iPhone 4S or even an iPhone 4, you shouldn't feel left out. And I wonder how many people are going to upgrade because Apple did one thing that's starting to bug people. They changed the connector on the bottom. Now, I admit this needed to be done. The connector on the bottom, the 30-pin connector that's on the iPhone 4 at every S and every previous iPhone that's on every iPod, that 30-pin connector is from 2003. That's an eternity in the computer era. And Apple says we couldn't make such a thin, small phone without changing the connector. But they did something that I think is very typical of Apple, but it's not a good thing. Instead of using a standard connector, every phone in the world now is using this micro USB connector. Apple decided to go with their own proprietary connector. Now, they may say, oh, well, we had to because of all the features. But, that, you know, I don't buy that. They went to a you know, and there is one advantage the proprietary connector has over micro USB. You can put it in either way. It's reversible. Woo! But it's not smaller. And here's the problem. It's not very eco-friendly because now everybody has to go out and trash their 30-pin stuff and get new stuff. And if you already have micro USB chargers, which many of us do, because all sorts of devices use it, not just phones, but lots of devices use it, including all your Kindles, everything. No, that's not going to work. You have to get something special for the iPhone. And here's where they put a little salt in the wound. Yeah, you can get an adapter for your old stuff. $30. $30. It costs them a buck to make. Apple, do you really have to? I mean, really, seriously. You want to appease people. You want to be nice to people. Make it cost. I don't care. Cost plus 10%. You don't need to make a 3,000% profit on us. Do you mind? I mean, really. You're changing the connector. You're breaking. Now, if you have a BMW with a 30-pin connector, you're not going to be happy. You have to get a new car. Because even if you... No, I'm not kidding. You have to get a new BMW. Because even if you buy an adapter, it no longer works. You can't control the iPod or anything. So keep your old iPhone, I guess, because that's what you're going to be using. Keep your old iPods, because the new ones all have that adapter as well. I have a radio that has a 30-pin connector. I have a Sonos dock. That was expensive. That has a 30-pin connector. All that stuff's obsolete now. So now we have to buy new plastic crap for a lot more money. This doesn't seem right to me. I'm just saying. And frankly, it's a money. It's well, Apple's a profitable company, and they have every right to. They're the most profitable company in the country, in the world, the most valuable company in the history of the world. And this is how you get to do it, by squeezing every penny out of your customers. So Apple has the absolute right to do it. Well, this is America. And you have the right, I have the right not to buy. Well, I don't have the, unfortunately, I have to because I have to review the thing. So I bought one. But you don't have to. And I think that this might be something people might want to consider. Do you want to, I mean, maybe it'd be a better idea either not to upgrade. I think a lot of people won't upgrade because they don't want to break their BMW or whatever. I understand they had to do this. Okay, fine. Bite the bullet. It's been 9 years. Time to upgrade. Then make the connector in the box, the adapter in the box. Okay, not everybody needs that. Right, okay. Charge us $5. Charge us $10. Don't charge us $30 for an adapter. That's ridiculous. That's greed. It's greed.
Big Ginge in our chat room says, Apple is an aspirational brand. Mercedes makes $75,000 on an S-Class. It's expensive for a reason. Well, I understand that. And, you know, there's no question that the iPhone 5 is selling better than any iPhone ever. And there's a reason Apple's been cranking them out in these Chinese factories since March. Because everybody's going to buy them. So I'm just singing into the wind. The good news is there's some other good choices out there. We've got a new Samsung Galaxy Note 2 coming out on AT&T, possibly Verizon. The new Lumia 920, the Windows phone, that looks beautiful too. So there are some choices, the Galaxy S3. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Now let me talk about ShareFile.com. I want to show you my ShareFile page. Here's what I do. So I need to send radio stations ads. Maybe you're in business where you have to share patient records. Now, if you're a physician, you know you have some very strict government regulations, HIPAA. So you can't just kind of email those because there's no privacy. Plus, but let's say you're an architect, you're sharing drawings. There's no privacy issue there, but those files are huge. You might get bounce backs. Email's not the solution in most cases. ShareFile is. Now, ShareFile's HIPAA compliant with all government regulations. Watch this. This is my ShareFile. By the way, notice branded, which is nice. You get your company logo on there. I'm going to share this temporary file right here. Okay, I don't even know what that is. Let's say I want to share that. A couple of things I can do. I can email it using ShareFile, and this will create an email. There's even an Outlook plugin, so you don't even have to go to the ShareFile page. I like to do this. Give me a link. And here's some settings that are attached to that link. Email me when the item's been downloaded. That's a checkbox. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading. That way I can track. You can set when the access expires. Never, after a year, 6 months, 1 day. Downloads per use. You could say, look, they get to look at it for 1 day, one download. That's it. Send the file. Then I get a link. Now, that link I could send in an email. In fact, let me show you what happens. It shows up in the email. They click that link. This is what they see. A branded page with my logo, you know, it's beautiful. And a download button, they don't have to create a ShareFile account or anything like that. This is the way to share large files. It's secure, it's fast, it's HIPAA compliant, and it's free for 30 days if you go to ShareFile.com right now. You'll see all the industries that ShareFile is customized for, from accounting and advertising and architecture to biotech to marketing and publishing, tech services, video. It, you know, they'll customize it for you. If you're going to take advantage of this, please click that radio microphone and it says enter name or offer code. And it's tech guy, TECHGUY. Okay. They say promo code in the ad. But you see, this is why, Josh, I said offer code. On the website, it says offer code. So enter the name or the offer code, tech guy. Select your industry. You don't have to. You could say other or not select at all. And you get 30 days free. You're going to love this. Promo code TECHGUY at ShareFile.com. It sounds very NFL-ish.
Sunday Night Football.
Isn't it funny? You could tell, you know. It's probably John Williams imitating. It's NFL Sunday Night Football. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. It's so funny because there must be some human gene that makes us want to have to take sides. It's got to be built in, right? And it's probably why we go to war. It's probably why we have religious battles. And there's one over a computer. It doesn't make any sense to me, but for some reason people identify with the Apple team. I'm on the Apple team, or I'm on the Android team, or I'm on the Windows team. And it's like, you say that quietly. I'm a Windows phone guy. Shh, don't tell anybody. Really, seriously, we have a couple in the office here. We have two people who use Windows phone, Tony and Alex, and they sneak around.
When I get the iPhone 5 on Friday, you can be sure I'm going to be whipping that out all the time.
Yeah, let me just see what time it is on my iPhone 5, because, you know, you're proud.
Well, I got a Galaxy Note 2. What do you got? It's 5.5 inches.
there's some psychological thing, right? Is it only guys? No, women do this too. In fact, I think one of the reasons the iPhone is such a big seller is not because of technology at all. It's because it's the thing to have. You know, it's you know, if you're cool, it's like a Gucci bag or a Macanudo cigar. It's, you know, Macanudo cigars taste horrible, but doesn't matter because it's the thing to have. So it doesn't matter if the iPhone 5 is, you know, I'm one icon row higher. I've got to have it. What is that in our gene? And then there are people in the chat room say, oh, Leo, you must not be an iOS fan. Well, my job is not to be a fan of any of this stuff. I am a user fan, if anything. I represent us, the users. And, we got to stand up for ourselves. That's all. Okay, I am a Mustang fan. That's different, Fritz. That don't you mess with my... And I am going to the 49ers home opener tonight, so don't you mess with my team. But it's you understand, it's equally silly to judge technology that way. I mean, you know, technology is it's just chips, and whatever's best, that's what you should use in theory. Steve in Hollywood, you agree? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey there, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, Steve. You're an iPhone user.
God no.
No, you're not.
Let's not get into it. But I'm a kind of an anti-Apple person, I'm afraid.
Yeah. See, that's what I mean. I mean, people take sides in this battle.
Exactly. But it's like Nikon versus Canon. They both take great pictures.
Yeah.
It's which one you choose to use, but they both do as good a job.
That's
good
point. Because once you're invested, as I am in Canon, I have a lot of Canon lenses. I can't go Nikon. Even if I look at the D800 and think, boy, I'd love to have that camera.
Same with the Mac thing, although I do find there's a more kind of self-righteous attitude with Mac people. They tend to kind of want to ram it down your throat. And more than anyone, you know.
Well, it's an icon row bigger. Come on.
And as you say, with the lenses, and I think, you know, going back many years, I think a lot of the allegiance to Mac at that time was more about the investment in software that you had rather than the hardware.
Right.
If you bought, you know, Photoshop and all those things.
No, that's true. Although people make a reasonable claim that they spent a lot of money on iOS apps, for instance. But they're only $1, $2, $5. You know, you're not spending thousands on iOS apps.
Yeah, now it's different. Back then, when it was either one platform or the other, if you've made an investment in software, you have to stick with the hardware. Otherwise, you've got to buy all that software again.
Yeah. Well, and it's becoming more like that. The truth is, these are computers. The cell phones we carry around are computers. And for many people, they're their primary computer.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It's pretty weird. In fact, you know, I almost think that it'd be good to have an analog phone in your pocket just to have a phone that works now.
I don't make phone calls.
Exactly.
I don't. What do you need a phone for?
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, the iPhone is a pretty bad, has been, in, at least in the where I am in the San Francisco Bay Area, pretty bad. It drops calls like crazy, and it's still bad.
You know, using it as a GPS or, you know.
Yeah, it's fine
at,
for that.
Suddenly, you know, the bandwidth's all sucked up. You can't even make a call.
Yeah, exactly. Try going to a tech conference and using an iPhone.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
They couldn't have, you know, had the analog system still in parallel on the phone just for, you know, phone usage.
Yeah.
That's, whatever.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah. I was also going to ask before I was going to get into my question, because I used to watch Screensavers, and I wonder why that isn't a viable TV program anymore, given that so many people are into.
You'd think, wouldn't you? So Screensavers is, Tech TV was a channel I worked on from 1998 to 2004. I did two shows there every Monday through Friday. I did an hour-long show called Call for Help, which was very much like the radio show. In fact, it was based on what I'd been doing on the radio for years. And then the Screensavers was kind of more of an enthusiast show, and we did projects and stuff. It was great. I left Tech TV in 2004 when it was sold to Comcast. Comcast merged it with their gaming channel, G4. They moved it to L.A. And here we are, fast forward 8 years later, G4 has decided to abandon technology. And now they're going to be, they say, the GQ of cable TV. I don't know what that means. And I'll tell you why it didn't work. Economics. It's so expensive to do a cable channel. We lost $50 to $100 million a year. Paul Allen, who owned the channel, that's why he sold it. He lost $300 million over the life of the channel.
So because you have, it's just the economics of cable television. So I'm doing essentially the same thing Tech TV did, but without the cable. I'm doing it on the internet. I do more shows. We have a larger audience than Tech TV ever had. And we're profitable because our costs are infinitesimal compared with Tech TV.
But then again, there's so much rubbish on TV that you...
Well, that's why. Okay, so what did G4 do? They started putting American Ninja and Cops reruns on. They were very cheap programs that generated a larger audience than the technology shows because more people would watch old Cops reruns. And they needed more people because of the economics. So what I think what's happening with internet television, this is very interesting. It's not happened yet, but it will happen, is because of it's so cheap to do an internet television channel, and anybody in the world can watch it over the internet, that you'll see a lot of, I call it handmade networks or artisanal television, where we make something that's not trying to reach a giant audience. We're trying to reach a very narrow audience, a specific audience. And we can be profitable doing that because we deliver, advertisers will be glad to advertise to that particular slice of the audience. It's much more effective. And our costs are infinitesimal compared to cable television. I'm using, for instance, I don't have any camera operators. I have 40 cameras. And they just are aimed at everything, and we just switch between them. We don't need a camera operator. And by the way, the cameras that we use at Tech TV were $20,000 broadcast cameras. I'm using $1,500 consumer grade Canons.
Right.
There's a huge. That's an example. Hey, I know you had a question, Steve. It's a great one. Hang on. We got to take a break because, yes, we do have to pay bills a little bit. It's not free, but we'll be back in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, one after 909. This is episode 910. And it was Michael Baker on the Twitter that suggested that as a theme song. And Kyle Benham, our musical director, picked up on that. Episode 910 of the Tech Guy Show. We can find all 910 episodes online. Audio for the first several hundred, and then video for the most recent, say, several hundred, at techguylabs.com. Audio and video available if you want to watch after the fact, absolutely free. There's no charge. We're proud to be free ad supported media. Yeah. So I was talking to Steve in Hollywood. Steve, are you in Hollywood? Are you in the business?
I'm afraid so.
May I ask what you do?
I work as a designer, art director.
How fun. Why are you afraid? It sounds like it'd be fun.
I guess on paper.
It's hard work.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it for so many years. I guess one gets a little more cynical.
Well, you know what's exciting? I understand, and having been many years in broadcast media, I kind of understand. But I am very excited by what the internet holds for media. And people with skills like yours, who, of course, need to make a living. Of course, you need to work in mainstream media for a while still.
But it's the same dilemma you have. The trouble is then, internet...
There's no money.
Material, there's no money to do anything. Right. So you're kind of stumped.
Well, we're in a transition stage, but we need your skills, Steve. We need the storytellers, the artists, the directors, the people who know how to do this stuff. I was talking with a good friend of mine who has a filmmaking background, who does internet television, and he bemoans the fact that the kids making YouTube videos don't have any of that. You know, they haven't learned those skills, and I think that they will learn them. I think they'll learn them over time. But it'd be nice if we could get some real pros in there helping out. Just something to throw your way. I look at people like Joss Whedon during the writer's strike, and he did Dr. Horrible. And that was great.
I did a show with him once.
Brilliant guy. Well, you might have a different perspective. You had to work for him.
I did Buffy for the first.
Oh, you're kidding.
Him, yeah.
I bow down to you, Steve.
Oh.
what did you do at Buffy?
Design the show. The sets.
Wow. In the early days.
First season.
Wow. That must have been fun. I mean, I think that was an interesting show. I mean, it was kind of a departure.
Yeah, I mean, I think horror gets a little bit of a... wrap. But in, I mean, for people like me, I think in the, you know, the creative end of it, it's actually a lot more fun than doing something that's pedestrian.
Oh, sure. Well, it's an honor to meet you, and thank you for the work you did. That was Among Geeks. That show is legendary.
Yeah, there you go. And I started my first ever movie, which I think you'll also find fun, was Return of the Jedi.
You're kidding! Wow. Did you art direction, set design? What did you do?
On then, I was just the gopher, the runner.
Fun.
When I came to film school, that was my first.
That's right. They did that in Britain, didn't they?
Yeah, all of them were done in England.
That's right.
Yeah. And I've gone downhill ever since.
I was thinking about Neil Armstrong, who passed away a couple of weeks ago. It must be hard. 38 years old. You've the first human to set foot off the planet. What do you do for a follow up? It's kind of hard. Anyway, what can I do for you, Steve?
The question I have was actually kind of on behalf of my wife. She has, and for her business, she had a standalone voicemail number that people would call. Which is on the internet, on business cards. It's a number she doesn't want to lose. And then she had a BlackBerry, and the AT&T, standalone voicemail messaging had a pager notification that it would page the BlackBerry if someone had left a message.
Right.
Otherwise, calling every hour thinking, hey, somebody called.
Right.
But she just switched to an iPhone, and of course it doesn't work anymore.
So here's what I would recommend. It's free, and it's a great service. It's called Google Voice. Google runs it.
Yeah, I tried that myself. I had some trouble.
Well, you know about it. Well, here's the deal. You can port that old AT&T number to Google Voice. It's required by law that you're allowed to port it.
And then set up Google Voice on the iPhone.
Yeah, and everything. So you set up Google Voice. The way Google Voice works, as you know, you've tried it, is you'll tell it what numbers to ring if somebody calls that number. But you can also have it. If my wife's a psychotherapist, so she doesn't want to, answer the phone in the supermarket.
Mine too. That's what she does.
Yeah, so this is perfect. So that's where voicemail is really handy. You want to go straight to voicemail. You could tell Google Voice to do that. But it immediately notifies her via text message that a call came in. It will send her, and it's kind of interesting, a text transcript. It's usually a little bizarre, but at least it gives you an idea. It's getting better, by the way. I noticed that the transcriptions are better. But it also will email, if you ask it, email the audio. So she can almost immediately go to Gmail and say, okay, let me hear that call.
But will that, because I called AT&T and there were two, she's on a very old messaging. She's not on the unified messaging.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You own that number, and the FCC requires that that AT&T give it up.
So why can it only port to Google Voice and not to the actual phone, it's the iPhone then?
AT&T won't port it to an iPhone?
No. The pager notification will only work
on why? Because it's same company. So they don't have to. If you got a Sprint iPhone, I think they'd have to. So I think I would bet it's this is a little weird loophole. I would bet, though, because it's an internal, and the company can do anything it wants. It says, no, you're still on AT&T. We're just not going to let that work. But if you went to an AT&T, a Sprint or Verizon phone, they'd have to. The FCC says, no, Simon owns this, or Steve owns this number. I know I call you Simon because somebody said he sounds like Simon Cowell. I apologize. Steve, Steve owns this number. Or yeah. Steve's wife owns his number. You have to give it up. You can't keep it. It's only because it's intra-company that...
Well, they won't give up that. Because it's a number, it doesn't have an area code. It's strictly locked into their voicemail system.
Well, of course it has an area code.
It doesn't. Because it's... I asked them this, so it's... Because I said, well, can you not release that number so I could either make it a regular landline or another line that I could, forward the calls, and it's locked into their old voicemail system. So it needs, with the pager notification, it will call a number, but it won't call anything other than a BlackBerry. And I'm wondering if I then now have to get an old style pager.
Did she get this in the 30s? is there somebody on the other end with a cable going, I'll connect you to your party? That is bizarre. No area code. I've never heard of such. So it's not a phone number. It's a pager number.
Exactly.
And is it a seven-digit pager number, or is it longer?
Yeah, it's seven-digit. It's a voicemail.
How interesting.
They could release the number, you know, just make it a regular, and they can't do that. So it's kind of stuck where it is, and it does have a pager notification capability, but it won't go to an iPhone, go to a BlackBerry. And I'm wondering then, could one get a virtual paging, you know, it's like having to get a pager now.
Yeah, I see the problem. And I'm not familiar. Maybe somebody who's listening is an AT&T engineer or a Bell, probably better yet, Western Electric Bell Company engineer and can help us. What is this number? And is there any way he can get it out of there into a more modern system? Holy cow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Some clarification on the Apple Lightning port. You know, we haven't seen it. We haven't played with it yet, so we don't know yet. Oh, my goodness. There's a giant cow coming into the studio. A balloon cow. What, did you guys steal that from the marathon? All right. Well, that's good. we'll find out what that is. Clarification on the Lightning connector. Rainier Brockerhoff, who is an engineer and has a blog called the Solipsism Gradient at Brockerhoff.net, says that Apple couldn't do what it's doing with the Lightning port, couldn't do the same thing with a USB connector, a micro USB connector. It doesn't have enough pins and it doesn't have enough voltage, so it wouldn't have the 2 amps needed for iPod charging. It only has 5 pins, not 9. Although the European Union requires, and Apple will offer, a micro USB adapter, because in the EU, all phones have to have micro USB connectors. Interesting. He also says that the reason that Lightning to 30-pin adapter is so expensive, $30, it's got some circuitry in it. It has to demultiplex the digital signals on the Lightning and convert them to analog. And that is usually more expensive than just a passive adapter. We shall see. I'm sure there's a lot more to talk about with this. It's possible that there is a technical argument. In fact, it's probable for what Apple did. So I take it back. I apologize, Apple. You had to overcharge us for that cable. You had to. You had no choice. And we're still working on this weird seven-digit number that is not apparently a phone number that our last caller, Steve's wife, is using and would like to connect. Now, Steve, one thing I might mention, and somebody in the chat room suggested this, there is an AT&T app for the iPhone that apparently does in some way support this. So perhaps there is a way. I will keep if you've got an idea, if you're a telco engineer and you've got an idea about what this special number is and how you could make it modern and use it in the modern world, I'd love to hear from you. It sounds like AT&T wants to hold on tight. 8888-ASK-LEO, or visit our chat room. The link is at techguylabs.com. Doug in Pasadena, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Doug. The AT&T app is called VM Viewer. I'm great. Thank you, Doug. What can I do for you?
I have a small production company where we do industrials and a web series, and we're looking to get a new desktop or two. Now, the caveat is we've been on Mac, and we want to go to Windows.
Are you abandoning Final Cut for something else?
Yes. Premiere, we're abandoning Final Cut. We're abandoning Apple just because tired of operating on Apple time.
I talked to the guy at NAB this year who convinced much of Hollywood to use Final Cut. He's a television show editor, commercial cutter, and he really was a strong advocate for Final Cut. And he said what you're doing is absolutely going on right now in Hollywood. The people are angry about the change in Final Cut. The new Final Cut doesn't have many of the features that the original did. And people are moving to Windows and Premiere.
Yeah, and it's not only are they changing, and we don't know what they're doing, in the future, but you know, every time we use a new camera and the current system doesn't support it,
right.
you know, Windows gets the support, you know, within weeks, and
right.
we're stuck, you know. So, yeah, we're looking to make the change.
You got to do it because, you know, you can't wait around.
No. No, clients can't wait around. We're trying to do this web series. We can't wait around.
Yeah. And, you know, by the way, everybody's been talking about, all the pros I know have been talking about this, and the fact that they haven't, Apple hasn't updated the Mac Pro in years, and it won't be till next year, according to Tim Cook. So this is kind of happening, and I guess the consensus is Apple doesn't care.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's feeling that, you know,
yep.
that I've talked to.
They say, fine, you know, we make so much money on the iPad and the iPhone. You know, you guys, there's a few thousand, you know, professional users. See you later.
Right, yeah. Well, and I mean, I understand the economics of it, but I got stuff to make, so.
Yeah, you got to. So you want to know what PCs to get?
Yeah. I have been out of the PC world for such a long time, I wouldn't even know where to begin.
I'm actually, you know, when we buy PCs, and we buy a lot of them mostly for the business office, I use Mac, you know, as much as I can. But in business, you got to use it. And by the way, we're still using Final Cut, but we're using the old Final Cut Studio. We haven't upgraded to Final Cut 10.
Yeah.
For that very reason. It won't, you know, it wouldn't support SANs, and we need to use a SAN.
Yeah.
So in the office, we buy Dells, and I've been very happy. I think Dell is reliable. They have, you'll want to get the high quality support, not just the basic support.
Okay.
And for business, Dell really has a good support. You know, they have, you know, they'll come to you and replace your machine and all of that stuff. I think Dell is a good choice. You know, I should ask Father Robert Ballister. He's our enterprise expert. He's in the chat room right now. It's Padre SJ. Robert, what do you think would be a good, for video editing in particular, a good machine? I think, you know, the nice thing about Windows is you don't have to wait for Apple to decide that this video card is okay. You can get the best video cards. You can get everything you need right away.
You know, when we're switching to Premiere, that relies on a good video card for...
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You choose the video card. And Dell will let you configure the machine and put it all together. Padre SJ says, Dell's high-end workstations for power. And he says, Acer's high-end stuff for price performance. Yeah, Acer is certainly more affordable. So if you're price sensitive... I'm not sure how good Acer support is, however. Dell really has the best support if you pay for it.
Excellent.
Hey, good luck. That's going to be a challenging change, although the good news is video editing is video editing. All looks the same.
Yeah. The basics of stuff, it's just finding where the buttons are.
Right. You know what you got to do. What's your web series?
It's called The Unemployment of Danny London.
Sounds good. Is it fiction?
Yeah, we've been having a lot of fun with it.
Is it fiction?
It's fiction, yes. But it's based on the current situation. It's basically a PR guy who loses his job.
I am, you know, we were talking before with Steve, who's a professional in the business too, and says it's so hard to make this transition. You're doing, I think, what a lot of companies do. You're still doing the bread and butter work to make a living, the industrials, but you're dipping your toe in the web stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
I think a lot of people are doing that. Yep.
And it's great because it's cast and crew is all volunteer.
Exactly.
And they're happy to do so. So, you know, we're real fortunate.
Yeah, everybody wants to get into the business. You know, understand at least the internet business. Good luck.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Leo.
The what is it? The Unemployment of Danny London.
Yeah, DannyLondon.com.
Easy to find. Thank you, Doug.
All right, thank you, Leo.
Great to talk to you. David is driving to Canada. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome to the show. So you're a Skype user.
I am. So I've, you know, as many of us do, I use it to keep in touch with family. Although I've moved a little bit to FaceTime for family stuff.
I love Skype. You know what? We got to take a break for the news at the top of the hour. I'll give you some tips when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, can I talk about Gazelle.com? That'll cheer me up. I want something happy in here. How about getting a new device for yourself? Perhaps a new iPhone 5. Or maybe you want to move over to the Samsung Galaxy S3. Here's what you do. Go to Gazelle.com. It's a marketplace for out of date or not, maybe just out of your interest hardware. iPhones, cell phones, iPads, iPod. Let's say you got an iPhone 4S, and you, as I do. I've got a nice white one from AT&T. It's 64 gigs, and it's $254.
Holy cow. So here's the deal. And that's in good condition. If it's flawless, it's even better. $278. That pays for the new iPhone, doesn't it? So here's the deal. You throw it in a box. Get some more stuff. Go back to gazelle.com. What else you want to sell? iPod? MacBook? Get rid of the old Air. Get the new one. What do you say? So it's very easy. They take iPhones, BlackBerry RIMs, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung phones, iPads, first, second, or third generation, iPods, Nanos, Touches, and Classics, MacBooks, iMac screens, and Mac Minis, and Mac Pros. And what they'll do is they pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. And then, this is the beauty part, they'll send you a check, sure, or PayPal. But if you get an Amazon gift card from them, they add 5% to the price. Their data experts will wipe it when they check the condition of the device. You know, sometimes, by the way, they even send you more money. I never heard of a company doing this. But if you said, oh, no, the iPhone's in good condition, and they look at it and say, no, that's flawless, they'll send you the difference. I get emails from people all the time saying, I can't believe they did this. It's flawless? Oh, they'll send you the extra money. GAZELLE.com. Don't just throw it in a drawer, because that's what we often do. You can get some money for it. I bet you have a ton of money worth of stuff just sitting in your drawer. Gazelle.com. Recycle the easy way. Keep it moving. Keep it moving. Ba-ba-da-ba. I got a ton of stuff. We do actually periodically put boxes together. But you got to, can't wait. I have a BlackBerry playbook and I can't sell it. Can't wait. You don't waste any time. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, digital photography, and all that jazz. In fact, our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, will be here. We're going to review our assignment at 33 past the hour. Stay tuned for that. Back to the phones we go. Oh, no. Oh, yeah, good. David's still online. I was worried. He's driving to Canada. And you use FaceTime sometimes and Skype sometimes to communicate with family. How does FaceTime compare to Skype, David?
You know, when I'm on the iPad, and I got my parents an iPad, too, and I have I have a 7-year-old daughter, and FaceTime has been very reliable. The quality isn't as good. I have a particular issue with Skype because I'm trying to record conversations, and like maybe many of your fans, I'm taking my first dive into podcasting. And I want to, it's the weak link, but there's no real alternative. But all the third-party add-ons for recording are for Skype, the colleague of mine. By the way, I met you at the Brick House. I'm the guy from Cornell who does the Disgust stuff. And you've been.
Oh, yeah, great to talk to you. And you did that robot thing too, right?
Yeah. The robot, with 18 of other colleagues of mine.
So David's specialty though is the biochemistry of disgust.
Right.
Maybe I should say the neuroscience really of disgust.
Yeah, I'm a psychologist, but you can't avoid neuroscience as a psychologist. So we try to understand it at every level. And by the way, before we get to Skype, I was just listening yesterday to your radio program. And there's something that I just think that doesn't get talked about enough, and I'm so glad that you brought it up, but it was about that gentleman who called wanting to record his daughter's conversations.
Yes. Yeah, and he has a 16-year-old daughter, and actually what he wanted to do was put some spyware on her phone so he could see everything she was doing.
And my first thought as sort of a geek was like, how dare you? But then as a father, it just broke my heart, and this poor guy probably thinks this is his last resort.
Exactly.
And the advice that you gave
him, I think, you have a 7-year-old. Wait till she gets to 16.
I don't want to.
And you know, I'm watching my 20-year-old, but what I talked about, and you're a psychologist and a neuroscientist, you could probably talk more accurately about this, is that how important it is for adolescents to make mistakes.
Absolutely. And the thing is that adolescents take risks that adults won't take. And out of those risks sometimes come some of the greatest things that, that our culture knows about.
And know? Sometimes teen pregnancy and horrors and automobile accidents. So we got to protect them from the worst, the permanent stuff. But you can't, but it's hard, and it's hard for a parent. And I know you know this. You got to let your kids make mistakes.
You do, and technology is intimidating, and I'm sure, you know, you get suspicious, but letting them, but trusting them to make those mistakes and talking to them. I mean, who knows what shape she was in, but I think
issue, you know, and if you have a child who's drinking or using drugs, or you know that the child's doing something dangerous, then it the landscape changes a little bit, and you certainly have an obligation as a parent to do everything you can to protect them.
Absolutely, and be involved, I think, is the take-home message, but don't read their diary if you can avoid it.
No, I think kids need a private place.
Right, absolutely. So just want to say that I think that talking about that is very important. But back to the Skype issue, you know, I find that we're both on wired connections. You know, I've done everything I can to read up on improving the sound quality, recording, getting the right tools to clean up the sound afterwards. The best I could do sometimes is rely on local recordings and ask him to get software and record his conversation.
That often is the best way to do it. It certainly is how some podcasters work. It's called double-ended recording. We do not do that.
Right. You guys on the Twit Network and all of your podcasts, which I'm a huge fan of, your Skype comes through so well, even when it's not good. It's
through years of pain. We did. Right. You know, I even tried double-ended recording in the early days, but what happened was it just took – it was too much trouble. It was a lot of work. It took a lot of time, and it failed as much as it succeeded, so it wasn't worth the effort.
Right. I'd like to stick to it as a backup, right, if you lose the audio or if it's
– And there are some very well-known podcasts that do this. You Look Nice Today sounds great because that's how they do it.
Right.
And then everything sounds like they're all in the same place. And certainly if you wanted to do NPR quality, which we're not, that's how you would do it.
Yeah, I just don't want the audio to interfere with what we're saying.
Yeah.
And so most recently we just realized that there was a lot of clipping on his end. I record mine locally and record his via Skype. And there's just, you know, there's only so much you can do editing. And I think this is a general issue for all people who use Skype. We rely on the quality that Skype gives us. And I know that you've, listening to you tweak your Skype settings when you're off air, you tell people sort of what they can do nowadays with the new Skype.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example, David, and it's particularly to this issue of, you called it clipping, but it's not, clipping actually is an audio term that means the audio was so loud that the top of the wave was clipped off. That's actually, I know what you're talking about, which is actually technically called gating. Phone conversations, like our phone conversation right now, you can talk and I can talk at the same time. And that's actually done through a lot of technical trickery at the radio station's end. It's not normally how things work. Normally, it's what we call half duplex, one person at a time. And Skype defaults to that half duplex. And the reason it does that is so many people use Skype with open speakers. And so you'll get all this echo coming back if Skype allowed two-sided conversations. So what Skype does by default now, they used to have a setting for echo cancellation. That's what you want to turn off. Only turn it off if people are using headphones.
Yeah. And we both are, and we're both on, you know, decent quality USB microphones.
So the reason Skype does the echo cancellation is that if I'm talking to you and you're listening on open speakers, my voice will come back to me through the speakers, and it's just very confusing, annoying, and weird. So echo cancellation is a good default, but it isn't a good default in something like this. So what we do, and it's a very complicated thing, I'm not sure I want to go into the details, but I will...
I'd like to know if there's a resource online, because he's on Windows too, and I don't really know how to tell him. I copied your instructions for how to edit that
on the
file.
Mac. Yeah, it's easy. There's a shared.xml file you edit.
Right.
I would just, the way we found it was Googling Skype echo cancellation fix or something like that, and there is a Windows fix as well as a. You know what I'll do is I'll get Josh Windisch, who does our show notes after the fact here in the office. Right. I'll get Josh to put that in for you.
And I don't know if you have any hosts who are running Windows machines.
Many of them are. In fact,
throughout my stay.
Yeah, all of them. A lot of them are using Windows, yeah.
What is a good plug-in to record Skype conversations on there? And I'd like my friend to be able to both record the conversation and record his thing locally, but there's only one mic, and his computer seems to think one input per program.
Yeah, and that's actually normally, and you know, we get around that by using mixers and expensive gear.
Yeah, right.
But you can record Skype on Windows with a variety of programs. In the past, I've recommended Pamela, which is a great service. I think it's Pamela.com. There are others. Power Grammo, says David Bix in our chat room. I've traditionally recommended Pamela, though.
So, okay.
But those are two, anyway.
Is there anything you can do to guarantee, other than, you know, being on Ethernet or something, to try to get it better? I know Skype, I don't know how it works really, but I know that it goes sometimes through another node.
Yeah, it's super nodes, yeah. Now, Microsoft's going to change that. Microsoft bought Skype. A lot of this is lore that we've collected over the years, and it doesn't always work. You know, some of our shows, somebody was saying This Week in Computer Hardware was particularly bad this week, and it's because one of our hosts, my old pal Patrick Norton, just refuses to do anything about his Skype. So Patrick doesn't have good bandwidth. For the number one thing is, if you can, use a wired connection and a lot of bandwidth, especially upstream, and that really will help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Skrillex. Huh? Skrillex, yeah. You can't play it right to the end. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. Talking about improving Skype calls. You know, there's a lot of little tweaks you can make and so forth. I'll do the best I can. We have, though, a resource on our wiki. Wiki, W-I-K-I, dot twit, which is my podcast network, This Week in Tech, dot TV. Wiki.twit.tv. I think we have an article. Well, I don't. Oh, yeah. Okay. So if it's on the front page, wiki.twit.tv, how to be a guest on the Twit Network. And I think that has, yes, it does, some Skype tips. For instance, the headset that we recommend. You want to make sure that everybody's using the same version of Skype. We need to add to this, we need to add the echo cancellation hack. I, for a long time, recommended using a dedicated port for Skype. That's to avoid what's called supernoding. You don't want to act as a supernode if you can. A lot of very little tweaks that can add up, but really the truth is all that matters on Skype is really, is having a lot of bandwidth. And it's not the downstream bandwidth. And people pay a lot of attention to that. You know, when you get quoted in internet speed, you almost always get quoted the big number, 20 megabits per second. It's the little number that matters, the upstream. And in most cases, internet service providers are what we call asymmetric. They offer a much lower number for uploads than they do for downloads. And that's because, until recently, most people just browsed the web and got email. More and more, though, we are uploading stuff. We're backing up to the cloud using Carbonite. We're uploading images. It's become upstream bandwidth has become more and more important. And so I don't recommend internet service provider, if you plan to do any of this stuff, Skype or anything like that, I don't recommend an internet service provider that offers anything less than, Skype will work with 384K, 768 would be better, and anything over a megabit upstream would really be desirable. If you have a true megabit, a consistent megabit upstream, you should have excellent Skype audio and even video. So look at your, it's sometimes hard to find. And often, by the way, they'll quote the maximum as opposed to what you can expect. So do a speed test. You should also look at something called jitter and ping time. These things can cause problems too. If for instance, on a satellite internet connection, the ping times are long, on the order of seconds. And that means your jitter will be very high, your latency will be very high, and it means there'll be a long lag between the time you stop talking and the time the person hears it. And that means the conversations are difficult. Jitter is a form of latency. There's another thing you can do that's very helpful, and we do this as well. There's a program online called Netalyzer, kind of spelled funny, Netalyzer. It's from University of California at Berkeley, ICSI. And this is a little Java program that you can run and will analyze your connection. It's part of a survey that they're doing, and they've told me they don't mind me sending people to them. They're trying this, the International Computer Science Institute at the University of California. They're trying to take a look at overall health, so they want lots of data points. So they're thrilled if you use that. When you run the analysis on here, it'll give you a good idea of what's going on your system. It might take an expert to understand it, but it's very helpful. And one of the things it detects is a condition called buffer bloat, which can really mess Skype up. And there's no known fix for buffer bloat. You just have to get a different router. It's a problem that occurred because router manufacturers decided that more memory was better and started jamming a lot of memory in their router, and it broke a key part of the internet protocol that involves congestion control. You can see there's a lot to this. It's probably not something most people want to spend time on, David. But of course, if you're a podcaster, you can use Skype, as we do, very effectively, if you take some time to tweak it. Shelley is in Agoura Hills, California. Our next call. Hi, Shelley. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm well, Shelley. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
My problem is I have WinX DVD Ripper Platinum, and I ripped a DVD. It works fine on the computer, but when I burn it in Roxio, there's no audio.
Oh, that's annoying.
Yeah. You have to read lips, I guess. But anyway, I did some research on the internet, and it said that Roxio is the problem, but I'm not finding out the fix, or maybe some other DVD burning program that will work better.
It does sound like Roxio is the problem, because if you can play it back after you rip it using WinX, then that means the audio's there. So what's happening is whatever you're using to make the DVD, we call it authoring, by the way, when you're doing this. When you're authoring a DVD, it has to be done very precisely. So I'm wondering if, for some reason Roxio is not doing it quite right.
I don't know. I've never had a problem with Roxio burning anything before, so this is
so
a first.
It's only on these particular DVDs that you've ripped?
Yes. That's it.
And the format of the file that you're ripping, what does it come out as?
I have tried it in a couple. I tried it in .mov. I tried it in, I think, MPEG-4. Those are the only two I tried.
You might try keeping it in MPEG-2. So the native format for DVDs, the format that your DVD is on and the format you're burning to, is MPEG-2. If you don't spend the time to convert it to another format and then convert it again, you'll have a couple of benefits. One, it'll be faster, but two, it'll also be much higher quality. And maybe there's a three, which is that you won't confuse Roxio.
Well, that will play on any TV DVD player?
Yeah, so there's a format for DVDs that's a very specific format about the resolution, the screen size, how the audio is encoded, all of that stuff. In order for a dumb DVD player to play it, it has to be exactly right. And so now, fortunately, we have somebody in the chat room, James, who is a level 2 Roxio support guy. So he's going to get in on this. And James, go ahead and give me any suggestions you have. But my guess is what's happening is when you're ripping it, you're putting it in a format that is not working well with Roxio.
With Roxio.
Yeah, because your Roxio works. It just doesn't work with these files.
Exactly.
So let's try ripping an MPEG-2, okay? And the file format or the audio for the DVD should be AC3, right? Yeah, AC3. So MPEG-2 for the video, AC3 for the audio. And if you keep it like that, I think you'll probably be able to burn it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, joining us now from Germany. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo. Good to be back.
You're back home?
I'm back home in Germany, yeah.
After your world tour.
Well, it was just the U.S. and Canada, but it took me 5 weeks, so I'm actually kind of glad to be back.
Not that I
don't like North America, but hey, there's no place like home.
There's no place like home, it's true. So, well, I'm glad you're back home, and now it's time to review our assignment.
Exactly. So the assignment was veggie.
Veggie.
Which followed the barbecue assignment. So
it was our response to all the meat that we got picked. And actually, I think we got more veggie pictures than we got meat pictures this time.
I think we have almost 50 pictures in the veggie assignment, I'm pretty stoked about that. It's pretty awesome.
So we should explain, this is an assignment, not a contest, not a competition. We're not judging you. The whole point of this is that you get to take some pictures. And, and what we'll do is you get you to upload those pictures to Flickr. We've got quite a few here. And then Chris will pick a few. You know, I know it's a little strange to talk about pictures on the radio, but these are photographs that kind of show some, some ingenuity and might inspire you in your future shots.
Yeah, it's actually very cool what we got. So I had a really hard time picking the three that we want to look at today.
Yeah, people really submitted some great pictures. Here's one of the barbecue chili. So he got them both in there.
Well, that one was more about beer, I guess. But
what do you like? Yeah.
Well, I've made a selection of three again, just to keep this short. And the first one is by R. Leverson 1, and he calls that veggie. Oh. Simple as that.
This is straight out of a cookbook. I mean, this is food styling at its height, right?
So what he did is he shot a picture of peppers, red and orange and yellow. And then we have the nice green stalks in there. So it's a really it feels like a complete color palette, especially as the background is kind of a darkish gray, which almost looks a bit like a blue. And the lighting on that is really, really good. So they come out really fresh looking. He also made sure to have really nice peppers in there that don't have any blemishes or anything, which is what cookbook photographers really look for.
Right.
Really the absolute pristine product. And I guess he probably also polished them. So this color combination, the primary color contrast between the red tones and the green tones in front of a dark background, the way he lit this really well, I really rang with me. I mean, this is a very classical picture, and he could easily put this in a cookbook.
Yeah, and the composition's kind of neat. It's not centered or anything. I like. Yeah, nice. Very nice. I would guess that he's not a photo, a food stylist, or a professional photographer. But this is a chance for you
not.
To try something. You know,
he also left out things. He cut this off at the top and on the sides.
Yeah, I like that.
That kind of suggests that there are more of them. You know, in your mind, it continues to all the sides. So it's really a really well thought out shot.
Nothing centered. I like that. Neat.
Yeah, I like that.
So well done, R. Leverson. Our next shot is a multiple.
By Julian Castillo. Well, if it was three different photos, it would be a triptych with four, I don't know what you call
it. Quad-tick.
A quad-titch or something. What I like about this is just simply the way of a presentation, the way he presents those four different kind of veggies. It's onions and tomatoes and peppers and I guess a squash of some sort. And he kind of kept everything at the same scale. So we have these almost same shapes, roundish kind of things at different colors. And then just the fact that he presents those as four different panels in one picture, puts them together and gives some context, I really like that. Presentation is really awesome.
Do you think he used a special tool to do this? Or
There are some tools out there that can do that. Actually, there's one on the iPhone called Diptych, D-I-P-T-I-C.
Yeah, I use that. I love that.
You just throw pictures in there. He might even have done it with that. I don't know. Yeah. But you can obviously do this with like things like Photoshop, for example, too. But Diptych on the iPhone is a good, or on iOS in general, I think there's also an iPad version, is a very capable tool that can certainly do that. Yep.
And our last one is a bunny wabbit.
Well, it's a veggie on a veggie. So
a veggie on a vegetarian, yeah.
This is one of the few pictures where someone had actually looked for a double meaning in the word veggie, and this is it. And I kind of like the. It's a bit of an irony. I mean, it's the
a black and white
rabbit.
Bunny wearing lettuce as a coat.
Yep, exactly. And I don't know what he did in order to make the rabbit hole still, but it did, and it's just kind of funny to see that because it has the two meanings of the word veggie, the veggie as the vegetarian and the veggie as the vegetable.
We've talked before about animal pictures, and I think you mentioned that the key is to get them looking at you.
Well, and in this picture, that is certainly true. And what is also great is the light again. It's light that comes slightly from behind. You can see that on the lettuce on top of it. The way the reflections form, and then it also has this beautiful catchlight in the eye, which makes it come alive, which kind of gives it a lot of liveliness. So cool, very cool. Kudos,
nice job. Thank you, all three of you. In fact, thanks to everybody who submitted photos. Very, very nice.
Oh yeah, so many other great pictures. It was really tough to make a decision
now,
here.
The deal is, you can go to our Flickr group and see these and all the other previously submitted pictures. Flickr is FLICKR.com. It's a Yahoo site, so you probably, if you have a Yahoo account, you probably already have a Flickr account. But if you don't, you can create one for free. Then go to the groups section and search for Tech Guy. And the Tech Guy group, you'll know you're in the right group because it's got a picture of me, a little drawing of me on the front, and we've got 9,722 members. 2,000.
That's a huge number.
I know. But, you know, we've only got 2,547 photos, so.
Well, we can use some more.
Not everybody who's a member has submitted.
That's true, and we want some more pictures. So how about I give you a new assignment?
New assignment from Chris Marquardt. Yes, sir.
And it'll be up for about 1 month, and I've checked. I mean, we have done so many assignments that it's really getting hard to find something, but I found something really simple that has lots of different meanings. Let's do face this time.
F-A-C-E.
F-A-C-E.
Face. Oh, boy. That's going to be fun.
I'm sure that'll yield a lot of interesting pictures.
Now,
go ahead.
We don't tell you what to do. We just say that's the word you're going to be illustrating or somehow expositizing on. And do it with it. You don't have to have a fancy camera. In fact, a lot of these photos are on iPhones and other camera phones. It's not the camera. It's the photographer. And it really isn't a contest. It's just a chance to get out there and take some pictures.
Exactly.
So we'll give you about a month to take a face picture of some kind. Doesn't have to be a face, a human face. I mean, we don't know. We're not saying that. Just whatever.
Shh.
Could be
don't
anything.
Don't say it.
Could be anything. Thank you, Chris Marquardt. Chris is at chrismarquardt.com. He does workshops there, a great podcast for people who are interested in photography called Tips from the Top Floor. It's in English and in German. And you can find out everything he's up to at chrismarquardt.com. And we'll talk again next week, Chris.
Next week.
Thanks.
See you then. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Love any chance to take more pictures, you know. That's why we do the assignment. It's just an excuse. Get out there with your camera. Let's go back to the phones. Tom's in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Greetings. Hey, you feel like an old friend, man.
Thank you. Well, we are old friends. We've known each other for ages. And old friend, if you just hang on the line, you probably know I got to take a break right now. But I will get right back to you. You want to talk about what your new phone should be. And I think that's a great question. Stay tuned. Let me talk about Stamps.com. It is, by the way, the best way to do postage. You don't go to the post office anymore. My desk, right here. This is my post office. I've got the Stamps.com USB scale. I plug that in. I go to Stamps.com. I print my own U.S. postage exactly what I need, no more, no less, using my computer, my printer, Mac or PC. I mean, this is great. Stamps.com. You get discounts you can't get at the post office. Amazing deals. Up to 21% off the... there's the scale. Look at that. It just magically appeared. Up to 21% off express mail, up to 15% off priority mail. I love Stamps.com. And I know you will, too. That's why I've got a special offer for you. This is great if you do a lot of mailing. In fact, if you really do a lot of mailing, Stamps.com can cost you nothing, which is very cool. And it's certainly great for eBay or Amazon sellers. Visit Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click the radio microphone to get your special offer. And when it asks you, enter Tech Guy, okay? T-E-C-H space G-U-Y. Then you'll know you're in the right place because you get my smiling face. And you get a $110 bonus offer, $55 in postage coupons, a free digital scale. You just pay the stamps, shipping and handling. It's $5. They give you a $5 supplies kit to make up for that. And they give you a month's free stamps.com. You're going to love stamps.com. I'm not kidding you. And where it says have a promo code, please do me a favor. Click that. Type in, not twit. T-E-C-H-G-U-Y, just like that, because they sponsor the Tech Guy podcast. Thank you, Stamps.com. And I love the post office, but I like it that I can just have the mail carrier come and get my stuff. And we use it here in the office. It's great. If you use QuickBooks, that's what we do. It just automatically prints everything out right from the QuickBooks. Stamps.com, use the promo code Tech Guy. Leo LaPorte, the Tech Guy. And we were talking to Tom in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who wants some buying advice. Hi, Tom.
Hey there. Welcome back on this side.
Thank you. So you're in the market for a new phone.
I am. I'm on Verizon currently, and currently I'm using the iPhone 4S. Looking into possibly a Galaxy S3. The iPhone 5, or holding out for the Motorola Razr Max HD.
Those are certainly three of the biggest phones out there. I would add, you know, this is a great time to be buying a phone. If you can hold out till November, you've got some great choices. The Galaxy Note 2 is coming to Verizon, I believe. Certainly coming to AT&T. Unfortunately, Verizon doesn't have a good range of Windows phones, so I'm not going to recommend a Windows 8 phone. If you were on AT&T, though, Nokia's Lumia 920 looks to be right up there with those phones that you mentioned. These are all the top of the line, fastest, bestest, nicest phones out there. And you're on an iPhone, so that's one argument for sticking with the iPhone. You've already invested in that ecosystem. It'll be certainly the easiest transfer. I've already, you know, taken my iPhone 4S, synced it to iTunes, make sure everything's on there. I did a backup. Cleaned it up, took off photos that I, you know, don't need. So I'm ready when that iPhone 5 comes. I'll just plug it in and restore the backup to it, and all my apps will be on there. It'll be a very easy transfer. So there is an advantage to that.
That does sound amazing. However, the new iPhone 5, even though it's on LTE, as you, I think you mentioned earlier, you're not going to be able to use data at the same time when you talk. So yeah. To me, that's big disappointment.
This is a limitation of Verizon's network. Eventually, everybody who's using LTE will move voice and data onto LTE, and it will all work fine. But right now, Verizon continues to use a technology called CDMA for voice and LTE for data. So the Galaxy S3, as an example, on Verizon, can do voice and data simultaneously because it has three antennas. One for CDMA and two for LTE. Apple decided not to do that. So the iPhone, when you get a call, your data's cut off. And if that's important to you, yeah, that's an argument against it. Absolutely.
Yeah, that was just a big disappointment because I thought for sure, you know, they would have cleaned that up. But I do understand the limitations of Verizon, but, you know, as we all know, they do have the most solid network nationwide, and I do travel a bit. And I also do travel internationally, which is my holdback with the Galaxy S3 because the Verizon Galaxy doesn't go global.
One phone do it all?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, for my travel, I buy unlocked phones, and I use them on T-Mobile or AT&T, a GSM network, and, of course, that's that means when I get somewhere, and by the way, this Galaxy S3 is a unlocked European version that I carry, and so I'm running it on AT&T with an AT&T SIM, but as soon as I get to Europe, I just put in a European SIM, and I'm good to go. So that is a disadvantage of the S3. Ironically, the iPhone 5 on Verizon is an international phone. It has a nano SIM. Now, that may be a challenge because you'll have to get a nano SIM when you go to the host country. And right now, nano SIMs are rare as hen's teeth.
Okay.
So, yeah, so...
Not quite as global as
you have to. You have to decide, do you want to travel with it or do you want voice and data? Simultaneous voice and data.
All of the above.
Given that you're already an iPhone 5 user, how important, this is what puzzles me about voice and data. How often is it that you're on a phone call and you want to use data?
Well, for me, it's quite frequently because I'm an internet marketer. That's my business. And then I teach people as well how to, you know, work from home through internet marketing. So a lot of times I'm on my phone in a remote location, possibly away from my laptop, my iPad or whatever. And I want to look up something in an email or something that we're discussing. And unless I have a Wi-Fi connection, I can't do that.
There you go. So that's the problem. And it's going to continue to be a problem on Verizon with the iPhone. Not with the, as you say, not with the Galaxy S3. You know, if you travel a lot, you can always buy a burner, a GSM burner phone and use that. In fact, it'd probably be easier than the iPhone because, again, this nano SIM is not widely supported yet in the outside of the iPhone.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I was wondering that myself, and you answered my question I didn't even ask. So good mind reading, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. See, we are old friends, Tom.
It seems like it.
Yeah.
I've been for a very long time and listened to you, and I just really appreciate the work you do.
Well, thank you. I love what I do because I get to have every one of those phones. And then when I travel, I'm going to Australia in November, Paris in December. I get to decide, well, do I want to bring, you know, what phone do I want to bring? But it's almost always a GSM phone because it's so much easier. So much easier.
I think that's what I'll do.
Yeah. All right, Tom, nice to talk to you. Yeah, the Galaxy, you will certainly not be disappointed by the Galaxy S3. And, you know, even if you've got a big investment in the iPhone ecosystem, you've got a lot of apps, there are very few apps that aren't duplicated on Android. Most of them are inexpensive or free on Android. I'm looking at my front page on my Galaxy S3. I've got Path, Pair, Facebook, Google+, Twitter, Gmail, Kindle, the Google Authenticator, Instagram, Social Cam, Glimpse, Google Maps, Friday, Sonos, and Google Play. Those are all free apps. Not one of those cost me anything. So I don't think it's going to be too costly to make a move to Android. You'll find it very comfortable. I mean, look, all, you know, that's why Apple sued Samsung. All smartphones are pretty much the same in many respects. I like the screen better, even better than the iPhone 5, I think. But we'll see when I get the iPhone 5. It's certainly got higher resolution and more bigger screen. It's a nice, thin, light phone. Having voice plus data is nice. It sounds like it's a must for you. So I certainly don't think you'll be unhappy with a Galaxy S3. I think a lot of I have to agree. I've been talking to people, and I think the consensus is people buy an iPhone because it's the phone to have. It's not based on the merits of the technology particularly. When the iPhone first came out, it certainly was. I stood in line for 6 hours to get the first iPhone, and it was worth it because it was a mile ahead of anybody else. But that was 2007. Here we are 5 years later. And there are plenty of excellent choices. I just talked about five different great phones, all of which would be as good as the iPhone 5. So, I don't think you need... I think you can make the choice now based on carrier. Remember, I've talked about this years ago. Everybody had to choose AT&T because that was where the iPhone was, and it was the only decent smartphone. Well, now everybody has it except for T-Mobile, and they're making it possible to bring an unlocked iPhone over. So you could choose your carrier first, whoever's got the best service for your area. If you travel internationally, that's a consideration. And then on every carrier, there's decent phones, really decent phones, both Android and, in most cases, iPhone. Vaughn, Laguna Niguel, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. So now a lot of the Blu-ray combo have digital copies that come in with their packs.
Yeah.
and I know how to put it into iTunes, and I have a pretty old iPod Classic, which I also bought an iPod Classic video screener where you put the iPod in and the screen's bigger so you can watch on a bigger screen.
Right.
Now, the older iPods...
Oh, we're running out of time. Hang on. We'll get to you right out of the top of the hour. We got to take a break for news. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. You can also use Skype out to call. We've got a website, techguylabs.com, where all the show notes are. techguylabs.com. Sure, the phone number's there, too, and a link to our chat room. I'll always love having people in the chat room. It's lots of fun. You know, we were talking before the break about cell phone choices, and there is one little thing that's something to keep in mind, and it just depends on how you use your cell phone, but I particularly like cell phones with replaceable batteries. Now, the iPhone doesn't have that. The HTC One does not have that. The Nokia Lumia 920 will not have that, but the Galaxy S3 does. The Galaxy Note 2 will. Having the ability, and I always buy, when I buy my Android phones, I always buy one or two extra batteries and a charger. Because, well, for instance, I'm going to, after the show, go watch the Niners play, the home opener. My phone, you know how it is. You sometimes don't get through the day depending on what you're doing, especially if you're doing a lot of, you know, internet. It's 100% now, but let's say by 7 p.m. it starts to get low. No problem. I've got a second battery with me. And so if you're one of those people that travels a lot, you're not always near a charger, you need to get your phone more than, say, 8 to 10 hours, having a replaceable battery is great. Now, the iPhone, you can get cases with additional charge, Mophie cases, and I see a lot of people do that. But let me tell you, when you if you do that... You're kind of getting rid of the whole advantage of the thinner, lighter iPhone, aren't you? So that's kind of a negative. Apple touts design, how beautiful it is, but you're going to lose that advantage if you have to put it in a case. I don't actually carry my phones, at least not my Galaxy phones, in a case. For some reason, I don't feel it necessary. Let's go back to Vaughn in Laguna Niguel, California. Is it Vaugh or Vaughn?
Vaughn.
Vaughn, nice to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Well, when the Blu-ray combo packs originally came out with the digital copies,
yeah,
I would import them into iTunes and then load them onto my iPod Classic.
Right.
And they would play fine. But the weird thing is the recent ones, when I load them into iTunes, it's fine, but it won't transfer to the iPod.
So the older iPods are not as capable in terms of playback, and obviously they've changed the format of those digital copies, and you're out of luck. You can transcode it, but the problem with a digital copy, and it's convenient, somewhat convenient, although you still have to enter in a code into iTunes to unlock it and all that stuff.
Yeah.
The problem is it's protected, and so you can't just re-encode it into a form that the iPod can handle. You might try, I don't know if this will work, because it's blue, I don't know what copy protection they're using, but you might try a program called VLC. It's free.
I've used it before.
Yeah, try and see if it plays in VLC. If it does, then you'll be able to use Handbrake, and you can re-encode it into a format that the iPod won't mind. It won't look as good, but it's on a little screen, you don't care.
Yeah, because it's weird. When I transfer it, it says it's transferred on, and I look on my iPod, it says it's there, but it won't play.
We've seen that, for instance, we do high-def versions of our podcasts for free.
Yeah.
There's no copy protection on them, but older iPods can't handle it.
Okay.
So it's just, you got to get it just right. The iPods have somewhat limited capabilities, not a super-fast processor in there. And obviously, the motion picture folks changed the code just a little bit, just enough that he can't play it on an older iPad or iPod. So VLC sometimes can get around the copy. It will be copy protected. It just depends what it's using. VLC in conjunction with Handbrake gets around copy protection on DVDs, for instance. Not sure if it'll work on digital copies. Ah, it's Fair Play. Okay. So it's using the iTunes DRM. Well, there are ways to get around that as well. You'll need to get around the copy protection. Then you can re-encode it. That's too bad. If it lets you, this is a pain, but if it lets you burn a DVD with it, then you can rip the DVD, no problem. Golly. It's a shame you have to even think about that. Henry's in Huntington Beach, California, our next caller. Hi, Henry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
Good, good. I'm having trouble here with the iPhone. I represent a charity in a nationwide voting contest on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been having problems with the voting system on iPhone and on Safari.
What happens?
Well, basically, Chase created the application, and when you go on a phone, partially it's because the phone screen's a little too small, but when you click application, there's some sort of when you click on the allow application button, there's some sort of a glitch.
Oh, I hate that. This is using Facebook to authenticate.
Right, right.
Yeah, and so it has to go through just right. There's nothing I can do to help you on this, unfortunately. What you have to do is talk to the people who made the app. They made a mistake. And, it's not necessarily their fault. I've noticed this with other apps that sometimes the Facebook authentication issue can bite you. And I've had this happen all the time, in fact, because now that I think of it, on iPhones and other devices. The idea being that if you use Facebook Connect, instead of requiring somebody to have an account, you could just say, well, we'll use your Facebook account. But in order to do that, you have to authenticate with Facebook. And for some reason, you know, Facebook's supposed to send back something called a token, a little number, not so little, a big number, that then identifies you and says, yeah, this is who he says he is. It sounds like that token's getting lost. The only thing you can do is go back to the app designer. Jason in Sunrise, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Yeah, I'm calling because I run a small remote computer repair company, and we provide services for home users, and we also provide services for small businesses. And I wanted to know, I was looking at this piece of software called Op Manager, and it's a network monitoring software.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know if you could recommend something that's just as comparable to this or something that might be free, because I was looking at the price.
It's expensive, yeah. Yeah, it's really expensive.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you something that's a lot less expensive. Free you may not be able to find. I don't, you know, this is kind of a high-end enterprise capability. Jason's basically doing what you call managed support services, where, in fact, we use an IT, outsource our IT here, too. So I use a guy named Russell Tammany, Exponentia, and he doesn't work here. He doesn't work for me. He's just, you know, I can't remember what it is, $5,000 a month or whatever. And he keeps a track of all of our IT, installs stuff for us, and monitors stuff. But that's the key, is this monitoring of the network. And he uses a tool. I'm not sure what it is. It might be Op Manager. And I remember it was whatever he uses, very expensive. And I should show you this because this is a sponsor, but I think it's Russell wants to move to it. It's called Go to Assist. It's from the folks at Citrix. And I think you know that they're a big sponsor of this show, have been since day one. We're big fans of Citrix. And this Go to Assist has been around for a while as remote management, but they now do monitoring. And we showed it to Russell, and it was a lot cheaper. And I think he might be using Op Manager. It was a lot cheaper than what he was using. So he's going to switch over to it. It's not free, though. You know, I don't know if there's something free in this arena. Maybe the chat room does. Again, disclaimer, Go to Assist is a sponsor. We do ads for him. But I think it's quite good. James, who's at Corel Roxio, says we use Go to Assist. You know, it's great for remote support. But I like the ability to do the remote monitoring. That really is kind of critical to being a good IT guy, a remote IT guy. Good luck, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't know what this is, but I like it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you question, a comment, suggestion. Well, the chat room to the rescue. They've come up with two very good free remote monitoring solutions. And many in the chat room use one or the other of these, and they both say they're great. One is called Nagios, Nagios.org. It's open source, very mature, remote monitoring and more, and it's free. Wow. Nagios. The other is Spiceworks. Spiceworks. So for our last caller, there's two choices, Jason, that are free. That's less expensive than OpManager, that's for sure. Don in Monrovia, California. Leo Laporte, let me press the button. The Tech Guy. Hi, Don.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
What can I do for you?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I did not hear you. I've got a problem here with my browsers that's causing me a great deal of pulling my hair out. Internet Explorer crashes frequently. Sometimes it crashes in the middle of my putting things up on my web, and so does Chrome. That, of course, I don't know why it crashes, but I would sure like to figure that out. The other thing is that with both Internet Explorer and also Firefox, I keep getting these annoying little links that pop up with in red, underlined, and encouraging.
Now, is that on just some websites, or is it on your on your stuff too?
I notice this most on my website.
Oh, if it's on your website, that's bad.
Okay.
Yeah, there are, and I hate this form of advertising, and some people use this, where they'll do a little squiggly underline, and if your mouse happens to get over that word, then a pop-up ad appears, and I think it's a repulsive form of advertising. But if it's happening on your site, that means you've got spyware on your system. You've got malware on your system. And it probably has to do with the crashes as well. Certainly we want to treat this, and then we'll worry about the crashes later because, that's not right.
Well, the one thing about it is that I noticed that different words are underlined for different browsers. For example, on Firefox, I get scholarships. For example, underlined, and it'll take you to actually how to get scholarships. And then on the same page, but on Internet Explorer, a different word will be.
Yeah. This is malware.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. You got to get rid of it. It's not really relevant. you don't know what else it's doing. It could be doing all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
It should not be on your system. So what version of Windows are you running?
9.0.8.112.
That's Internet Explorer. But do you know what version of Windows you're using? Is it XP?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's 7.
Windows 7. Wow. And you have been on a regular basis updating every second Tuesday when Microsoft offers those fixes. You do those Windows updates, I hope.
I haven't set automatically to
good,
do.
Good, 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 good man. So yeah. It's something somebody downloaded, or you downloaded onto your system. It can happen. There are two schools of thought here about what to do. My opinion is once malware gets on your system, the only way to know that you got rid of it is by starting over. Now, that's a pain because it means you got to back up your data. You got to format the hard drive, reinstall Windows, all of that stuff. So that's one school of thought. It happens to be mine. It is the only way to be absolutely sure you've cleaned it up. However, there's another school of thought, and I should probably give them some credit here. It sounds like a minor malware. This is the problem. We don't know. Something's on your system. The thing that got on your system could be one of hundreds of things on your system, but the only one that's visible, for instance. And that's what's scary. The really nasty stuff doesn't show up. But the fact that you've got one thing usually indicates there's more. In any event, I'm just pointing out that the best thing to do would be start over. The next best thing to do is to go out and get an antivirus or a malware scanner. A free one that everybody seems to like a lot is called Malwarebytes, MalwareBytes.org. You can run that. It'll probably find the infestation and remove it. And it may find other things. I would then make sure you have a good antivirus on there and scan regularly, keep it up to date. You can also run the malicious software removal tool. Microsoft puts that on your system and updates it every second Tuesday. But it doesn't run a thorough scan. It only runs a quick scan every second Tuesday. So you might want to run a thorough scan. You could do this in addition to Malwarebytes. Do it before Malwarebytes. The way you run that is by pressing Windows R, the Windows key and the R button simultaneously, or clicking Start, clicking on Run, and then just type MRT. MRT. And that'll run on your system. You'll see a window. Do a thorough scan. See if there's anything else on there. If both, Malwarebytes comes up clean after you run it and MRT comes up clean, you're probably all right. But there's always that nagging little thing in the back of my head that says, but how do you know? And most security experts will say, hey, you don't know unless you format the drive and start over. You might want to, as a third precaution, go to eset.com and run their online scanner. It's free. And then you'll get all the advice you can, and it's up to you whether you want to take that chance. I always just reinstall. Well, I haven't had malware in years, but I always recommend reinstalling. And surely, if I had malware on my system, I would absolutely wipe it and start over. It's just because two reasons. One, there could be hidden stuff on there, and two, really nasty stuff cannot be removed by MRT or Malwarebytes. It buries itself into system files, and the removal would make an unbootable computer. But try it. See if it fixes it. It could be you got just like a little tiny little bug, little just drive-by infection. If you keep seeing those underlines, though, you got to reinstall. And it's probably the case that that has something to do with the crashes. It's not been my experience that Internet Explorer or Chrome crashes a lot. Pat in Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, Leo. Hi. Good afternoon to you, and thank you very much for being there to answer computer questions.
My pleasure. I love doing this.
Okay, I have a question with regard to getting into what is called event log. I believe that comes off of set configurations, and when I go in there, I have a series of things that say that are stopped, and I have another.
Don't worry about it. Normal. Okay.
That are activated.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Don't look at it. Pretend it doesn't exist.
Does that degrade the computer?
No, it doesn't do anything. Don't look at your event logger. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don't look at it. It's just logging events. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. If you want to call in, ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion. Johnny is next from Mountain View. Hi, Johnny. Hello, Johnny.
Yeah, hi, Leo. You hear me?
I hear you great. What's up?
Yeah, long time no hear. I was wondering, we've been hearing for quite some time about this supposed iPad Mini that was supposed to come out Wednesday. Kim Commando said so.
Why do you listen to her?
A good show. I like to listen to all of them.
Okay, but she's a nitwit. But okay, go ahead and listen to her. But
anyway,
she's wrong. Obviously, she pays no attention to what's going on in the world.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So let me explain. Let me tell you the truth. You want to know what the truth is?
What?
No one knows anything because Apple doesn't say anything. However, Apple has these tame journalists that they drop a hint to. Wall Street Journal, All Things D, a blog called The Loop. When these guys, and another blog called Daring Fireball, when these guys say what Apple's going to do, you listen because Apple is known to drop a hint with these guys. So what is this story? They never were going to announce an iPad mini this week. Kim Commando's a nitwit. They may be doing an iPad mini. There seems to be a strong consensus. And given the fact that we knew every single thing about the iPhone 5 ahead of time, I would guess this is true. This is the problem. Apple has to manufacture this stuff months ahead of time to meet demand now, right? So they will go to China in the spring and say, okay, you guys, you got to keep this under your hats.
You cannot tell anybody, but we're going to make this thing called the iPhone 5, and we're going to make this thing called the iPad Mini, but don't tell anybody or we'll be really, really angry. Now, that works if you're telling your employees that. Nobody from Apple leaks this stuff. It doesn't work so well if you're in China telling some Chinese workers, hey, don't tell anybody or we're not going to pay you your 50 cents a day. So all this stuff leaks out because they've been manufacturing it since March. So we do know, in fact, a little bit about what's going on, I believe. We knew every single detail of the iPhone 5. And the consensus is there will be an iPad Mini. It will be 7.85 inches. Mm-hmm. It will be effectively exactly the same as an iPad 2, 1024 by 768. It'll have the iPad 2's processor, the same speed, same amount of memory. And this is what Jim Dalrymple at The Loop and John Pachowski at All Things D and John Gruber at Daring Fireball, the three tame journalists, say it will be next month, October, that Apple will have this event and announce it.
Next month.
Next month.
Okay, well, I'll keep looking for that then.
All right, John. Now you got the straight stuff.
Yeah.
Stop
Thank
listening.
You very much.
Stop listening to that other girl. She doesn't know what she's talking about. Lady, pardon me. We don't know anything about pricing. You see, this is a perfect example. We know about the hardware. Why? Because that has to be made in China. And these suppliers and manufacturers, you know, they leak like sieves. And now that Apple has to make so many ahead of time, they've known about it for months. It's interesting. We don't know as much about the iPad Mini, do we? We haven't seen pictures or things like that. And that's because I suspect it's a new product for them. They're not ramping up production as early as they do with the iPhone 5. They know how many iPhone 5s they need. They need millions. In fact, they underestimated, didn't they? They sold out in 1 hour on the Apple website. 1 hour they sold the first shipment. So even then they didn't make enough, even though they've been making them for months. But what doesn't leak out is the price. Why? Because the Chinese manufacturers don't know that. They have no idea. That's what people at Apple might know, but Apple's very as tight as a drum. They don't leak anything. We don't know, by the way, how many iPhone 5s they sold, but given what Apple must have known, which is that this was going to be the best-selling iPhone yet again, that the demand, they've got a pretty good idea now, pretty good handle on how much the demand they get every year when they announce these things. I would guess they ordered millions. 1, 2, 3, probably 5 to 7 million, I would guess. Now, some of those go to the phone companies. You were able to get a Verizon iPhone long after they sold out on the Apple Store. Some of those go to international sales. And some of them go to Apple stores for day of sales. Friday, Apple stores will open early, and they'll have some stock. So let's say they made 10 million. I would guess it about half of them were available in the Apple Store. So, you know, it's completely a ballpark guess. But I would say roughly 5 million in an hour. That sounds right. That's pretty impressive for them to sell out, even though they know what kind of demand they're going to get. Dave in Binghamton, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Not too bad, except for I would hope to still use my Aperture that I purchased off of the App Store.
What's wrong? It should work.
Yeah, it should work, except for I had to replace my hard drive. And after I did that, I did back up all my applications onto an external, but they have the circle with a line through it on those, so I can't open those, and I wanted to...
No, you're not supposed to. What you're supposed to do is reinstall it from the App Store.
Right, but the problem now is I have a Core 2 Duo, 2006 MacBook Pro.
Oh.
Mountain Lion, can't download.
You're out of luck.
Aperture.
Yeah, why'd you go backwards? Why'd you go backwards?
I didn't go backwards. My MacBook Pro won't use Mountain Lion. It's not
enough. Yeah, so if you buy something in the App Store from Apple, it's only good on machines that the App Store runs on. That's it.
Right, which it was at that point.
Right,
you know, when
but
I
now
it,
you're running on a machine that doesn't have the App Store on it. So if you were to get if you were to get a new Mac and log into the App Store, it'd work fine.
Right, exactly. But nothing in my computer changed except for my old hard drive failed, so I had to replace it. And so because I've replaced the hard drive, my purchase from the App Store doesn't work.
It has nothing to do with your hard drive. It won't work because you're not using Mountain Lion.
Right, but I did, like, I downloaded it when I had 10.6.8.
So, yeah, the issue is not the hard drive. It's that you're not using a, what are you using, Panther? What are you using?
I'm using Snow Leopard's, the 10.6.8.
So I don't understand why aren't you using a more recent one?
Because 10.7 won't work on the old.
How did it work before?
Because it was the old version of Aperture.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It wasn't. The current 3.3.2 won't work on.
Yeah. You can't use the new version. So you want to use the old version.
Yeah, I want to use what I purchased, and I can't seem to get it.
Doesn't Apple still offer it for download on their website?
I'm not sure about that. They definitely can't get it in the App Store.
No, it won't be able to. It's a different version.
Oh, right, yeah. But online, I haven't, on their website, I haven't seen a place for it because all the advertising on their website shows 3.3.2.
Right, yeah. In the past, for instance, with Final Cut, because of the hue and cry, they did continue to sell it as a download. Yeah, I just went to the Apple Store, apple.com/aperture, and you have to get it from the App Store. It's only $80. Wow, that's an interesting conundrum. So to summarize, you bought Aperture when it used to be just a download from Apple. In fact, you might have even bought a box at the Apple Store. But then you've lost the original because and you didn't save it or something. And I would go to the Apple Store and say, hey, genius, come here. Make an appointment with the genius. Explain this. I bet you they have a way of getting you the older copy. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Leo will rock you. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Our website, techguylabs.com. That's where we put all the show notes, the previous episodes. Everything's up there. 910 episodes strong. Actually, some of the older episodes we still have in the old site, in the archives. We're slowly moving those over. But everything's there, free, no subscription necessary, audio and video of every show, and links to the Twit Network, my podcast network, where I continue to do this kind of tech talk all week long, nonstop. Jono in the chat room asking an interesting question. Is quad core better than dual core on mobile phones? For instance, the iPhone 5, which is, we're not sure, but pretty sure just has two cores, not four. That's two processors, not four processors. My Galaxy S3 in the unlocked version, the European version I have, has four cores. But is it faster than the two-core U.S. version? Well, in most cases, no. In most cases, no. Because mostly you're not multitasking on a smartphone. You're doing one thing at a time. Maybe two. You're not doing four. So I wouldn't worry so much about how many cores your processor or your phone has. It's more important how much RAM it has, how fast the cores it has are. I think the iPhone 5, for instance, is probably the fastest phone on the market, not because it has four cores. It doesn't. It only has two. But because the processors in there are highly optimized. So in most cases, no. It doesn't matter how many cores. It's just a selling point. But, you know, people pay attention to that, so the companies that make these talk about these specs. It's, you know, I praise Apple at some degree for not getting caught up in the spec wars, right? Jones in Sacramento, Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, Joan.
Hi there. How you doing, Leo?
Very well. How are you?
I listen to you every week.
Thank you.
But I have a problem myself. I had some, my husband died recently, and people in here, and they unplugged everything. I'm afraid to plug everything back into, I don't know which cord goes with which gadget.
Oh, no. You know, that happens even to, I mean, it happens to me when I take my home theater apart and then move it.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably a good idea right now to label all your cords. What I would suggest, Joan, if you do want to set it all back up, is you probably want to call a local home theater installer or somebody like that because...
Well, you know, it's just for the computers, but you know, if you plug a wrong plug into a computer, you can blow it up.
Well, I don't think so. If it's just computers,
so?
No. I think you're all right. I think most of those, all of those plugs are
manufactured in such a way that you can't put the wrong plug in the wrong hole.
Okay, because I have 4 computers. I mean, I love this stuff.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm so sorry about you losing your husband.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm in my 70s. Late 70s. He's in his 90s. And, you know, I'm still addicted to all this.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, my mom, who's almost 80, she'll turn 80 in January. Same thing. She loves it.
Yeah, I do, too. And I've listened to you since, you know, day one.
The only issue is
in L.A., I always listen to KFI.
Thank you, Joan. I really appreciate it. The only issue is it may not work, but it won't hurt anything.
But it won't blow up my machine.
No, you don't have to worry about that. It'll either fit or not fit.
I've done that before, hooked something into the wrong thing and wrecked it.
Yeah, don't jam it. If it doesn't fit.
No, I mean, I put it in right, but, you know, if the wrong.
No, I can't think of anything that you could really.
Okay, because I have 4 different computers here. You know, my kids are doctors, and so when they get something new, they give me their old stuff.
Get your kids to come over and fix it up. Or find a smart college kid. You're in Sacramento. There are a lot of colleges there. Yeah. Maybe somebody at Cal State could come over, put an ad on the bulletin board there. Because it's probably something you could do easily. But just don't jam anything, you know. And if everything should fit nice and easy, don't put a phone jack in your network. If you've got phone stuff, you know, stuff plugged into the wall, careful with that. Make sure that's going in the right place. But I don't think it's going to be too difficult.
Yeah, I just have 3 laptops, and the cords got mixed up when, you know, people in here when my husband died. People tend to get into your stuff.
Well, that's not nice. And if they unplug it, they should plug it back in.
Yeah, well, they just...
I'm sorry.
...it all, and so now I'm trying to figure out which goes where.
Yeah, no, you're pretty much safe. Everything should only fit into the connector that it's supposed to fit into. But you could also find a geek at a local college or even high school who could probably help you with that. It's not too hard. And, Joan, stay online, stay in touch. That's fantastic. It's just, I think it's... You know, it's a communication tool now. It's not just a big calculator. It can do so much more. Somebody in the chat room at Wenco is saying, match the colors. So backs of computers now are color-coded and so forth. I think you're going to be all right, Joan. Don't be too afraid of doing that. It should be fine. Hi, Sandy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on. I'm glad. I appreciate your trust. 3 geniuses couldn't solve this.
Well... 3 geniuses, 2 managers, and 1 behind-the-door tech person.
And they're all scratching their heads.
Yes. In fact, they sent me home the 3rd time. I went 3 visits. 2 of them lasted longer than 2 hours.
Wow. So tell me what the problem is. We have about 4 minutes, so I'm going to try to get this done. Yeah, tell me what the problem is.
Okay. So, you know, I take trips. We have photos, and we like to share them with each other, so I burn them on a disk from iPhoto.
Okay.
Very straightforward.
Yeah.
And so I just got back from my other trip, and I tried to burn my photos. You know, select them, and you hit burn, and everything should be fine. So what it does is it kind of goes through the process like it's burning, and then it spits my disk out, and an air box comes up. So that happened over and over. Went to the first visit. They tried some things. They did all this stuff.
What kind of Mac is it? iMac?
It's an iMac. A desktop iMac.
See, unfortunately, that DVD burner is built into that iMac there.
Right. So what they did is they said, oh, it looks like your super drive is broken.
Yeah.
And they actually replaced it, and I had to pay for it. And I said, well, okay, you know, it's a couple years old. All right, I'll do that, right? And went home, was all excited, went home to burn it, did exactly the same thing. Brought it back. They looked at it again. They brought other geniuses over, another manager, and they still did not fix the problem. So after 3 visits, they sent me home, and they said, well, you're going to have to, it's probably your photo library. You're going to have to rebuild it. Go home and rebuild it. I went home, saved it, of course. Rebuilt my library, same problem.
Wow. I have no idea.
So what do you do? I mean, Apple's really good. I've never, ever had a complaint about the Genius Bars or anything about them, but they kind of left me hanging.
They can't leave you hanging. They got to fix it. I don't understand why they're not fixing this.
Yeah, I mean, that was the last thing they said, that they've...
There's a few things I would try, and you know, they should have tried all this. First of all, let's try burning something not from iPhoto, but from some other source, because that's how you would find out if it was your iPhoto library.
They actually did that. They built another library and downloaded some pictures from the internet.
And did that work?
And it would burn.
It would burn. Okay, yeah. So all troubleshooting is this process of eliminating possibilities. So now they know the DVD burner, the SuperDrive works, the discs you're using work. It's clearly your iPhoto library. Now you've got a problem because so here's the deal. If you can get your pictures out of the iPhoto library. You want to go into your pictures folder and right click or command click on the file that's called iPhoto Library. And lo and behold, it's not a file at all. Mm-hmm. It's actually a folder. So you command-click on it, and you actually control-click on it. I'm doing it right now so I can follow along. And you show package contents. In there, there's a folder called Original Photos, or Masters, I guess they call it now. Those are your pictures. They're all good. They're all safe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.